open up to Genesis chapter 30. Genesis chapter 30. A couple of kind of holdover applications from last week. If you can remember what we've been looking at and studying through the book of Genesis, the most likely place for the book of Genesis and time to be written, we typically think of that the book of Genesis being written by Moses, but the time of being in the wilderness, whenever the book of Genesis is written, while the children of Israel are there. And I want you to think about what we went through last week. All these different law principles under the old covenant, in terms of if you're going to have multiple wives, you had to treat them with equity. You could not reduce what the first wife was being given on a regular basis in order to provide for the second. Even in terms of thinking you could not marry sisters while both were alive because there would be a rivalry between the two. Thinking other things along the lines of you could not change the birthright just because you loved the second wife more than the first. All of those principles at hand. And I want you to think about for the Israelites that were in the wilderness, they had received the law from God, and here they were getting to read or hear at least the book of Genesis and learn how valuable the law really was for them. All the things that the law would spare them from having to happen. Of going, you know what? Should I marry her sister? No way. You should not do it. It's not going to turn out well. And as you go through about, should we be able to change who the birthright goes to? Nope. No way. It's only going to cause turmoil and going to be a terrible decision. And you realize when we start to look at the covenant as going, you know what? These laws are in place to protect us. As opposed to what it turns out when people are rebellious of thinking, oh, I don't like this. This is not what I want to do. And then what happens in the end? It doesn't turn out good. And so whenever you start to see that what God gives as commands or principles or even within covenants of going, you know what? These things are not a burden. And that's exactly what 1 John 5 talks about, that his commands are not a burden because you realize this is life is what's being offered. Now, so you understand here they are in the wilderness, the Israelites, getting to hear, number one, here's the law that God gave to Moses, and then hearing all these stories from their own ancestors in the book of Genesis and realizing, oh boy, I'm so glad we don't have to go through those things again. And then you think about another lesson that we really learned last week is how thankful husbands should be that there's just one lovely wife you get to be married to. Because once it gets beyond one, you see how difficult it becomes. And to appreciate that in terms of seeing, even within the old covenant, the king was to only have one wife. And of course, here's Jesus now who sits on the throne, the descendant of David is king. And he only has one bride, and that's the church, his body. So, you come here in Genesis chapter 30. Look down at verse 25 as we start to kind of move forward here. I'll kind of catch you up on the timing as we go. It'll lay it out exactly for us. But verse 25 says, now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph. And the two previous verses tell you exactly about that. He says that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. As soon as Joseph is born, what does Jacob want to do? I'm ready to go home. And if you remember, Rebecca had told him whenever he was being sent away back in Genesis 27, verse 45, basically, whenever your brother no longer wants to kill you, I'll send for you. And here this is, now you're going to find out here shortly, this is 14 years later, and Rebecca still has not sent for Jacob to come back home. But now here it is, 14 years have gone by, and he's saying, Joseph's born, I have 11 sons, one daughter by name, perhaps other daughters as well, and saying, I'm ready to go back to my homeland. And so he turns to his father-in-law and think, I've never heard really of a situation nowadays of going, his double father-in-law. And he says, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Verse 26. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for you yourself know my service which I have rendered you. He says, you know I have done exactly what I said I would do. I served you 7 years. You didn't treat me well. You gave me Leah instead of Rachel. I served you 7 more years, and now I have Rachel and have all these children and all these wives. And he says, you know the service I've rendered to you. I've done what I promised, which tells you, are you starting to see a change in terms of who Jacob is? Because you think about the reason that he left his homeland in Beersheba was because of his own trickery and deceit. Now the tricks are starting to be played upon Jacob, and he's starting to become a person that actually keeps his word and really is kind of a man with some integrity. Then notice how it continues on. Look at what Laban says. Verse 27. But Laban said to him, if now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. What does Laban really desire? I want you to stay. You've worked so well for me. I want you to stay. And when you think in terms of going, it's not always the easiest relationship to work for your father-in-law. And here he is and saying, all right, I want you to stay. And I want you to notice, why does he want him to stay? Because he's been blessed because of it. It's not because Laban is being just inviting. Laban's motives here are because of, look at what's happening with me because you're here. Well, that's not necessarily the greatest motive, but I also want you to notice here, he says, I have divined that the Lord, notice Lord in all caps, the covenant God, I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. Now, does anybody here wonder how Laban divined to know this? Do we ever have curiosities when we come to these things? Now, here's the next question we need to ask, though. Why do you think it doesn't explain it? Think about it. Why do you think it doesn't give you the explanation about how he divined to figure this out? Because is he right in terms of, is this blessing coming because of Jacob? Yeah. And you go, why does it not want to tell us this? Because if it did tell you, what would people do? They'd want to do the same thing. There are times our curiosity starts to get stirred, but if it was satisfied, it would lead us in the wrong direction. And we need to learn to appreciate that sometimes. Because here it is, and you realize too, there are other times in Scripture whenever people were not working off of necessarily a calling on God in terms of Jehovah God or the covenant God, and they're led in things that are correct. Maybe you think about the story in Matthew chapter 2, whenever the wise men from the east show up. What are they following? They're following a star, and all of a sudden they come to Jerusalem, and they want to find out, where's this king of Israel? And where's he going to be born? And you go, here are people who are not necessarily following Jehovah God. They're following a star, but here it lands them there. And it doesn't give you a lot of details about what exactly they're doing in terms of how they navigated that. But you realize, then they have to go off of, well, all right, here's what it says in Micah. Child's going to be born in Bethlehem. Figure those things out. There's other stories in the Old Testament. If you think about 1 Samuel chapter 5 and 6, the Israelites have not been faithful, and the Ark of the Covenant has been taken by the Philistines. And the Philistines have a god by the name of Dagon. And every place the Ark of the Covenant is, the Philistines get cursed. Whether it be with boils, whether it be with hard times or difficulty, and it gets so far away that finally it talks about in chapter 1 Samuel 6 that they divine to find out the reason why and what they should do with this Ark of the Covenant. And by their own ways, they discover we need to send this ark back to Israel. And you go, how did that work? But it doesn't tell you. Because remember where the Ten Commandments begin. Have no other gods before me and no graven images. So why would I tell you about serving false gods? Why would I tell you about how they did things? Because anytime you discovered those things under the law, what were you supposed to do? Utterly destroy them. And you go, and not even speak of them anymore. Now, you see what's at hand here when it starts to bring these things up. So look at the next aspect of what hits. So he says, I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. Then verse 28, he continued, name me your wages and I will give it. Now, just consider that. Let's kind of try and tie this together with a place that we've been. You've been at a job for 14 years. The one who you're working underneath says, I can tell that everything you do always turns out really well. You're saying you want to move on. I'm saying I want you to stay. You tell me what you want to be paid. I'll give it to you. Whoa. What does this tell you about Laban? What does he truly recognize about Jacob? It's worth a lot to me for you to stay because I can tell the covenant God is with you. Now, I want to share this with you. We're going to go 6 years down the line. Look in Genesis chapter 21 and look at verse 38. I want to show you this transformation that's going to happen and to give you a little bit idea of the timing of it. Genesis chapter 31. I'll get the numbers right in a second. Genesis chapter 31, look at verses 38 through 42. This is a conversation that's going to happen 6 years later after where we are currently. It says, these 20 years I have been with you. And he's talking to Laban. So if you want to put it together, 7 years for Leah, 7 years for Rachel, 6 years to work together, 20 years. He says, these 20 years I have been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flocks. I have not taken advantage of you. Look at how good things have turned out. Verse 39. That which was torn of beasts, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. Whenever an animal died, I replaced it myself. I didn't take that as a loss on your part. What do you hear in that? Integrity? You hear even in terms of going, even if it costs me something, I'll make sure that it's right for you. Then it continues on. You required it of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. He says, now if something was stolen, he says, here's what I did. He says, you required it of my hand. Verse 40. Thus I was by day, the heat consumed me and the frost by night and my sleep fled from my eyes. He says, I have labored for you day and night, whether it was super hot or whether it was very cold. And whether I was tired, I was here. And I did it right. You're starting to see the integrity of Jacob, aren't you? You're starting to see how God's refining him. Now, notice how it continues, verse 41. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. How faithful has Laban been? Not so much. Remember what he said just right there before in chapter 30? He says, you just tell me what your wages are, I'll give them to you. And then what does he do? Oh, you're starting to get more than me. Let's change your wages. And how many times did that happen? 10 times. How good do you think you would be if your wages changed 10 times and it was not beneficial for you ever? You're going, oh, good, job security. Probably not. Then, verse 42. Look at what Jacob is realizing. Now, I know this is 6 years. This is the bookend of this conversation we're having in Genesis 30. But if the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, so he rendered judgment last night. Now, this is about a message that Laban got the night before from God. We'll just leave that where it is. But he says, you know what? If God didn't step in, you would have left me with nothing. Who does Jacob recognize as in control now? His God. Now, you see this transformation of Jacob over the course of time while he's there in Paddan Aram or in Haran. Now, look back at Genesis chapter 30. Back to where we started. So when you get here to verse 28, and once again, that conversation in chapter 31 is 6 years later. And sometimes 6 years can be a drastic change. Verse 28, he continued, name me your wages and I will give it. He doesn't say, and then I'm going to change it whenever it's not no longer to my advantage. But you see what's going on. Verse 29, but he said to him, you yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. Now remember, Jacob's been doing this already for 14 years. Now, you start doing the math, how different was your life 14 years ago than they are today? I mean, if you start talking about 2011, everything's still the same? No. And you realize, well, this is a lot here. He says, look at what I've done for 14 years. He says, look at how your cattle have fared. Then, verse 30, for you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also? He says, do you see the difference since I've been here? Now, don't necessarily look at this like Jacob getting up on his high horse. Because remember, what did Jacob want to do? He wants to go home. It's as if he's saying, is this not enough for you? Whenever I got here, you had very little. I mean, if you think back in your head, Rachel, your daughter, was taking your flock out to wait for somebody to move a stone so that your sheep and goats could be watered. Is that still going on? He says, now look at what you have. He says, you have a multitude. He says, and the Lord has blessed you. And this is a blessing in terms of to speak good words. Because what's happened for Laban physically? He's been benefited. Is it because how faithful Laban is? No, because you know what's coming. 10 times he's going to change the wages to try and get it to work out to his way, his favor. He says, bless you wherever I turned. He says, but now when shall I provide for my own household also? Now, just consider for a second, how big is his household? How many wives does he have? How many children does he have by name? He's got 12. He's got 11 sons and one daughter by name. He's got 4 wives. How would you feel about having, oh, you know what? I got a family of 12 kids and 4 wives. And I don't even have a flock of my own. Right? Would you be concerned? Do you get concerned about how things are going financially at your house, even if you just have 1 or 2 kids? What about 12? 4 wives? Now, can you understand his concern? You see why he's ready to go home? I'm ready to leave Laban behind. He says, this should be enough for you. Verse 31. So he said, and he is Laban, what shall I give you? What's it going to take for you to stay? Laban understands why he's being blessed. He doesn't understand it enough to change who he is, but he understands it. And then notice what Jacob's response is in verse 31. And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. Is Jacob in this for the physical stuff? Now, remember what his concern is? His family, his household. He says, I don't want your things. I'm not here for the physical stuff. Has Jacob changed? I mean, why did he leave Beersheba again? Because he stole his brother's blessing. And he had already worked his way around to get his birthright, too. And all those things are about a physical side. There is a spiritual side to the blessing. Don't forget that. But realize. And now here he is. He says, what do I have to give you to stay? And he says, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. He says, but if you'll do this, I'll stay. Are you curious? Verse 32. Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted sheep and every black one among the lambs and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages. He says, just let me go through the flock and let me pick out these. He says, and that'll be my wages and you'll get to keep the rest. Oh, this is quite a statement here. Now, you may look at this and be wondering, why I picked these? And I want you to kind of notice, it is a little different. Every speckled and spotted sheep, so there's the sheep side. Every black one among the lambs, there's the young sheep. And the spotted and speckled among the goats. So he's just dealing in terms of sheep and goats and the black lambs. He says, and that'll be my wages. Now, you may be wondering, why does he pick these? What's really going on? Well, go ahead and look again at Genesis 31. Look at verses 10 through 12. The Lord had come to him in a dream to share a little information with him later on. Genesis 31, verse 10. And it came about at that time when the flock, well, actually, let's back up a little bit. Look at verse 8. If he spoke this, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth striped. He's saying, look at what the Lord did. Verse 9. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. Now, I want you to notice this conversation he has with Rachel and Leah is who he's talking to at this point. Verse 10. And it came about at the time when the flock were mating, and I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream. He says, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. And mottled is just a fancy word for they had spots of color or they had smears of color on them. Verse 11. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. He said, lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. And you realize he gained some insight along the way. Now, he didn't have that dream before what we're reading here. But just understand, he's gaining some insight from God. This is not just something that he just picks out of the air. And I'll tell you, I've read more on sheep and goat genetics this week than I have in all my life, and I'm certainly not going to share all that with you because it wasn't a whole lot that I'd read for anyway. But if you start thinking in terms of genetics of things, just know, if you just know the very basics of genetics in terms of dominant and recessive genes, if you have two options, just think of them as an on and off switch, it leads to you're going to have one that's super dominant, one that's super recessive, and you'll have two that are right in the middle. So if you choose the extremes, you're going to get half, and if you choose those that are in the middle, you'll get half. It's kind of an interesting way to break it down. If you have more than two options, now it spreads out even further, and the extremes are there if they're solids, then you get all this spectrum in the middle. So you can see a little bit of an advantage there. Remember, he's been doing this for a while. It's not as if this is the first mating season that Jacob has seen. So here he is, verse 33, back in Genesis 30, verse 33. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come concerning my wages. He says, it'll be easy to tell whether I have any of your sheep or not. He says, and think about that. From the very get-go, what does he want to have? Let's do honesty. Is this a different guy than 14 years ago? Oh, man, this is so different. Let me go put on the skin so that I feel like my brother and I can go stand before my father and get a blessing. He's starting to learn his lesson, isn't he? And he's starting to stand on principles. Now, look at what happens as he continues on here. He says, everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen. He says, if you find any that should belong to you in mine, he says, we'll treat it like it's stolen. And I'll repay more than what is expected. Verse 34. Laban said, good, let it be according to your word. Whatever you like, as long as you stay, I'm here. Because you'll notice the details that are given in verse 35 are not the same as the details that were in verse 32. It's kind of curious. So verse 35. So he removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, every one with white in it and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his sons. Now his sons are not super old. At this point in time, if it is the same year, in fact, that Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob is 91 years old. And so in 6 years, whenever he leaves to go back home, he's going to be 97 years old. Now, I don't know what you think about this, but how do you feel about negotiating wages with someone who's 91 years old and saying, you just tell me what wages you want, and I'll give them to you? A little different situation. Now, granted, he's going to live to be older than 100 for sure. But notice what's here. He continues on. He says, then he gives him the care of his sons, who probably at best would be 10 to 12 years old, but maybe not even that old. It's kind of hard on the math because it works out to be like they'd be under 10. But notice what's here, verse 36. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Now, consider this. You hear 3 days of separation. What do you see in that? Do you want anything to cross over? If all of a sudden one of the wrong color is born, how much effort does it take to take it over? 3 days. And another 3 days if you consider coming back. And so you start to look through this. 3 days between shows, look, I'm not going to take anything that's not mine, but this also comes at a great disadvantage to me because now I've got to take care of not only Laban's, but my own. And he leaves his sons to take care of his. You understand how you're not traveling 3 days' journey back and forth all the time. Then he continues on. Verse 37. Now it starts to get a little more curious. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees, and peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. Well, that's kind of curious. Notice how specific it is. Poplar, almond, and plane trees. Then, verse 38, and he set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks in the gutters. He says, even in the watering troughs, where the flocks came to drink, and they mated when they came to drink. Now, if you do a little bit of botanical research or pharmacology, you come to find out that these specific woods do have some nutrients in them that are special. And if you notice specifically, where do they place these sticks? In the watering troughs. So the nutrients that are in the wood now become part of the drink, part of the water. So they can easily be taken in. What you find out, and I'll let you go do your own research on a lot of this, but in these three, if you think about the poplar, the almond, and the oriental plane tree, if you put those together to drink them, this is old school salt block kind of stuff, of going, here's the nutrients, and it did typically help the fertility rate, it helped the strength rate of these animals before they would mate. And you start going through that and you realize there's these aspects of what's here, but in the end, who is the one who's really making the genetics work out? God is. Because if you start to do the genetics, you still get probability. You don't get exacts, right? I mean, you typically feel like when you flip a coin, if you did it four times, what do you expect? You expect two and two, but it doesn't always turn out that way, does it? And you realize the reality is, and remember, what is Jacob going to say about all this in the end, in 6 years? Who's making these things come together? God is. And he knows that. Now, he's doing to the best of his ability, but you see what's at hand. Then it talks about here they are, they mated when they came to drink, verse 39. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. That's his part. Isn't that something? It says, Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the stripe, and all the black in the flock of Laban. He says, and he put his own herds apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. What do you see him continuing to do year after year? I'm going to keep our flock separated. And if he ever wants to show up and see my flock, he doesn't. They're not all dog-eared tagged or anything. He says, you can just look at the coats on them. If you see any that are supposed to be part of yours, you'll notice they're not part of mine. He says, you can check my integrity any day you want to come. You think that took effort? It took a lot of effort. Are you seeing this transformation of Jacob? He's becoming different, isn't he? Now, notice how it continues on, verse 41. He says, moreover, whenever the stronger of the flock were mating, Jacob would place the rods in the side of the flock in the gutters so that they might mate by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. And you go, well, it sounds like he's trying to do something to make it offset. He goes, yeah, but he still knows who's making it happen. Here's what the Lord's doing. Then verse 43. So the man became exceedingly prosperous. It had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Now we're getting beyond just flocks. He says, exceedingly prosperous. Now remember what he had on day one of this? He had two wives, two more wives, 12 children, and he had nothing for himself. And he wanted to leave and go home. Laban says, you tell me your wages, I'll give you whatever you want. You're 91 years old. He says, here's what I want. He says, that's what we'll do. And now here he is. And what is God doing? He keeps on blessing Jacob. Because now look at the character of Jacob. I'm going to have integrity and honesty. And that is something he sure didn't have before when he got there. Now, and you notice here, he says, large flocks, had servants, male and female, camels, donkeys. And did Laban know that it was because of Jacob that things were going so well? He's not oblivious to all this, is he? So, here's what I want us to really focus on for the rest of our time. Was Jacob a blessing to Laban? Certainly. Just for him to be there. It didn't change who Laban was. He doesn't instantly become somebody who's wonderful to work for. But Jacob becomes a blessing. Here's what I want us to think about. For those of you that currently hold down jobs, are you a blessing in your workplace? I want you to think about that. You don't do it to be seen by other people. When you think about what does it really take to be a blessing in the workplace, you know the kind of people you enjoy working with, and you know the kind of people you do not want to work with, that you hope, I don't get put together with them today. But to realize this aspect, think about other stories you know in the Old Testament, even in the New Testament. Who did God use to put into a place that was a rotten situation And because they're there, it turns out really, really well in the hands of God. Who do you think of? Think of Joseph? You think about Paul? Think about Daniel? I mean, you think about in terms of what God does through Joseph, what God does through Daniel, and what do you notice about those two men? How's their character? Honest. Even when it hurts them, they're willing to still do it. Daniel gets thrown to the lion's den. Joseph gets thrown into prison. You start thinking of other situations where even if they're not necessarily working for someone else, we're going, look at what Esther and Mordecai do. Here's Paul who gets arrested in Philippi for doing nothing wrong. And because of him, there's a benefit that's offered to not only the Philippian jailer, but even his whole household. Because you find people of honesty, integrity, and most of all, faith. Even whenever it doesn't look like it's going well. Now, look over to Ephesians chapter 6. Let's get a little more specific. And I know we're preaching through Ephesians on Sunday mornings. And you can already think about the attributes that are really needed to be really a blessing in your workplace in terms of what we learn from chapter 4 in terms of speaking the truth, of keeping your emotions under control, of making sure you're there to try and help others, that you're using your words wisely to be encouraging to others, that you're being kind-hearted and forgiving and tender-hearted. And you go, those things are there, and realize those are really the foundational aspects of love. And then to go, but these instructions are given on top of those to go, specifically if you're going to carry out a work in terms of a job, and he's going to talk about here in a minute about whether you're slave or free. Same principles at hand. But Ephesians chapter 6, look down at verse 5. You go, what do I really need to be a blessing in my workplace? He says, slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh with fear and trembling in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ. So when someone who's your boss, manager, the situation master, they require things of you, who should you act as if it came from? You know what? I'm going to do this for the Lord. I don't really want to put in these extra hours. I don't necessarily want to have to be here at this point in time. But if the Lord asked me to do it, I would do it. You ever think that way? There are situations where people ask us to do things, and we go, you know what? I get tired too. But then you think in the back of your head to get to the right motive and the right decision to go, if Jesus asked me to do this, would I do it? And we go, if he did, I would. And what should we come to the realization of? He is. He is. Now, don't take me off into the ditch about if they ask you to do something ungodly. We're not talking about that. So, here he is, he says, do it with fear and trembling, because I'm doing this out of honor to God, not out of honor for this manager, who may not be ungodly, who may even be crooked. But you realize, this is the way I see it. Will God be pleased with that? Look at verse 6. He says, not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ doing the will of God from the heart. He says, and don't just do it one way whenever they're present and have a different attitude when they're not there. Well, that takes a lot, doesn't it? When you really start thinking about attitude, going, not only am I to do it as for the Lord, I'm to do it with a right attitude. You know what the right attitude is? Humility. Humility. That's the attitude of the righteous, is humility. and you realize, he says, I don't do it to be seen. I don't do it to make other people happy. I do it out of the right motive because this is what I would do for my God. Then, verse 7, with goodwill render service as to the Lord and not to men. He says, with goodwill. So why am I doing this? Not only for the Lord, but I'm going to treat you well, but I hope you get stung for it. He says, are you going to really do it with goodwill? And can you appreciate the word render? Think about things that are rendered of going, like wringing out a wet rag. He says, if you were really to be squeezed into these difficult situations, what would be rendered out of you? Goodwill. I'm doing it out of the goodness toward you because I'm doing it for the Lord. Doesn't that change your attitudes at work? Then notice where he goes next. Verse 8. He says, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. So these principles just apply to slaves? That's where we know the application about us and jobs is very fitting here. Now, here's another thing. Is God going to forget what you're doing? When you render service for Him, no matter what the situation is at work, is God going to be forgetful? He never will. He's a faithful God. Did God forget Jacob whenever he was starting to stand on honesty and integrity? He didn't. And realized he's not going to forget us either. And specifically here, he says, whatever good thing each one does. Now notice it does say good thing. Is it different whenever we're doing bad things? When you start embezzling things from work, you start taking advantage of situations. He says, you're going to receive it back, but it's not going to be good. You'll reap what you sow. Had Jacob experienced that? Oh, he sure had. When he woke up after his wedding feast and all of a sudden, here's Leah and not Rachel. He started to understand the price of deception. And all of a sudden, he didn't like it so much anymore. I'm assuming. Now, here you see what he says. He says, whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. And you go, is that really the way we see our responsibilities at work? And also to see, if we're servants like this of the Lord, can God use us? Because we're really serving Him. And all of a sudden, now he has a servant at your workplace. And it might even be, here's a voice and an ability to share the message of Jesus. It may not even be with someone who works there. It may be with someone who comes in as a customer. And you realize, here's opportunities. But if we're not going to walk worthy of our calling, if we're not going to be people who speak the truth, you're going to be careful with our emotions to keep them under control. You realize, oh, we're going to get away from that. And we're not going to be a blessing at work. And you realize, out of all the people, should it surprise us if all of a sudden work goes, you know what, we're so glad you're here. Everybody may not feel that way. Your boss may not feel that way. But other people around might. And you realize, what am I here for? Remember what Jacob's real question was? What's going to happen to my household? You think, here we are working, and you go, you know what? I'm doing this so that the Lord can bless me so I can take care of my family. And I'm going to honor Him with it in everything I do. Chuck. Right. Overnight. Right. And sometimes it takes a long bit of plowing before you start to see the harvest come in. All right. We'll close it down right there. Have a great rest of your week.